Welcome to Cinema Savants, your weekly dose of movie news, movie reviews, and the occasional rumor, with your hosts, Todd Vandenberg and Rob Steele. And coming up in this week's show, Disney news galore. Also, an assorted who's directing what news, and an even more bizarre cryptocurrency story. But this week, we're also joined not just by Lee Vowell, but Ted Consonant. No, that's not right. Ted Hicks goes with Lee Vowell. But first, just to further complicate Todd's emotions, the Hershey Cookie Layer Crunch Vanilla Edition is not as good as the mint. These are the wrong notes. Black Panther. Wow. Black Panther set all kinds of records. Fifth biggest opening of all time. Best opening for an African-American director. And I'm going to screw up the previous guy's name. Is it F. Gary? I'm dyslexic, so putting two names like that next to each other pissed me off.
F. Gary Gray.
Thank you. No, I can read The Fate and the Furious. That's fine, but damn. Yeah. Previously at 98 million record, this one, what was it? I didn't write it down. $242 million, which may or may not have tied with The Last Jedi. I've read that it beat it. I've heard that it's just below it. Right. Let's call it a tie. Can we call it a tie? Or is that bad of me? I don't know. Anyway, someone else can say something because I've run out of things to intro the show with. Talk it's about Black Panther.
I know you've seen it. No ties. It's like kissing your sister.
Everybody's seen it. Everybody's seen Black Panther at this point. I mean, everybody. The four of us.
No, I believe everybody has seen it.
I think everybody has seen it. 242 million means enough people have seen it that we can talk spoilers without spoiling it. And if you haven't seen it, get off the couch and go.
Yeah, exactly.
I would also like to say that I think every community activist group and church and group home have also seen it.
They showed it at my church, which is a group home.
And you're a community activist. There all we right.
Go. I have this take on Black Panther, and I know that I think people have it wrong, honestly. It shows that white people should have colonized Africa. I mean, when we leave them to their own devices, they start fighting each other. I mean, thank God for Martin Freeman's character coming in and saving the day.
Wow.
I will say something. We had touched on this last week and kind of worried that it was going to have a big drop in its second weekend, because typically when you have a huge opening weekend, there's a big drop off, and miraculously it did not happen. It's looking to be only the fourth film ever to clear 100 million in its second weekend. So it's amazing that Black Panther keeps on breaking records. Especially since, you know, it's a standalone Marvel superhero film. Typically, those haven't performed as well as the group pictures, the Avengers, the two Avengers flick, and the last Captain America one, which, of course, was really an Avengers flick.
Yeah.
So, obviously, there was a bit of pent-up demand for this story.
And it's a great movie.
Exactly. It's an exceptionally well-made movie. It's
the
really,
biggest
really
Marvel
good.
Opening behind the Avengers.
Just which like. Is, yeah, and when you compare that to, like, Ant-Man, Doctor Strange, I mean, that's what it needs to be compared to, not the Avengers.
Right.
Sure. And it's, sure. Man alive. Incredible.
If I could just, clearly I was joking earlier, it was really Andy Serkis that saved everything, but, no, in all seriousness, I mean, one of the things I really liked about the film is that Michael B. Jordan is phenomenal in the film anyway. But his character, even though he's quote unquote the bad guy, he has some righteous anger. He's
exactly.
Just reacting probably wrongly. That's what's driving him. But I like that, you know, it wasn't just like, okay, you've got this black and white No pun intended. Black and white bad guy who's just bad. I mean, you know, Andy Serkis, it was just out for money and his character is that. But Michael B. Jordan really is the bad guy. But he's not really, I mean, he has a righteous anger about him because of, you know, what happened to his father and a family thing. But I really like that aspect. I think the last, what, two lines that he has in the movie are phenomenal. Yeah, I mean, I just thought the whole movie, all the actors were great in it. I mean, I thought the direction, and it was directed by a guy who had done Fruitvale Station, for instance. And I'm not talking about the racism. I'm just talking about the quality of the film. And I thought the film was, I saw it on Sunday, last Sunday, and I saw it again on Wednesday because a friend wanted to see it on Wednesday, and I saw it with my daughter on Sunday. I would have watched it again. I enjoyed it. Rarely is there a movie that I actually like enough to go see it, you know, three or four times, but I enjoyed it that much. I would go see it again.
Waiting for it to come out on DVD. Because I want to watch it repeatedly without having to spend $19.95 for a ticket.
You know, Courage is not so bad. I mean, it was like, I think I saw a matinee on Wednesday, and I think it was $7. So
that'll do. Well, you're not contributing to the big millions of dollars, though. Yes, yeah, sorry, Ted. I didn't cut you off.
No. I'm with Lee. I'm with you. I go see matinees. That's just what I do. I'll go there, and yeah, for the most part, I'm being a cheapskate. But it just makes it so much easier because, you know, later on during the evening, you don't know. I mean, when you go to a movie to enjoy the movie, not to deal with the crowd that comes with, you know, everything else. And not to say that Black Panther brought that specific type of crowd out, but it was a packed house. It was a 10 a.m. movie. It was a Saturday morning. And I would say 95% of the seats were filled. The one thing I will say is in regards to Michael B. Jordan's character, much more colorful, a better back, stronger backstory than the lead. And you did feel a certain way about it. You did feel a certain way. Once you understood his story, you said, okay, yeah, technically he's the bad guy, but based on his story and based on, you know, I guess him feeling that he was wronged or, you know, he basically had he should have had, you know, his shot at the throne, which he did, but maybe it should have went to him, you know, based on what T'Chaka did to, you know, his father and the tie-in with Oakland. To me, will it win an Oscar? No. Will it, you know, probably be, you know, the most popular box office of the year? Well, you know, if it wasn't in a year that it was going against the Avengers, I would say definitely. But it's going to, I think, you know, hey, it will run a close second.
Which again, is phenomenal for a one-character movie. And, you know, as far as the hero. I mean, that's amazing. And a lot of it has to do, obviously, with the direction, with the cast. And we were talking about it last week, and Angela Bassett is like the fourth most important female lead. When does that happen in a movie?
Next to never.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, she just dominates the screen, and not in this movie. And of course, I mean, her role is a little different from what she usually plays, but that, I mean, this movie is just busting out with talent. We talked last week that Walking Dead may see Michonne written out because I think a couple people got launched into stardom on this movie. I mean, Michael B. Jordan is way past due for that. I mean, that's ridiculous that this guy isn't like huge. After this, he should be.
The Human Torch held him back, but
yeah.
Well, I mean, to me, Jordan's character reminds me of Alan Rickman's character, and he's not that evil. Well, Alan Rickman's character in Die Hard, because they're both just like that could be about the movie. Movie could be about the bad guys, and yes. Actors did so well in those roles that it's like, you know, that's one thing I'll always remember from the film is Jordan when Rickman was awesome, you know, and Jordan was great in this film. Those characters reminded me of each other as far as what I took away from them being the quote unquote bad guys of the film.
Yeah, I mean the classic line is the best villains are really the heroes of their own story, and I can't think of a character that better portrays that than Michael B. Jordan's role in this. he absolutely is the hero of his own story. And depending on your viewpoint, you know, not really cool that he wants to go kill a lot of people, but he has his reasons. It's not just because, ooh, he's evil, you know? He's not the Red Skull. I mean, there's a lot of depth to this character.
The other thing is, we don't like what he wants to do, but he feels like, as you pointed out, he's the hero of his own character. He feels like that would help people.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's not like he's doing it just to kill. He's doing it because he thinks that's how the world becomes a better place.
Exactly. He's doing it to help his people, which is a pretty bit different motivation than most villains have, that's for sure.
Also, I would, you know, commend the director and also Marvel itself for making it a one-picture arc for him. That what makes the character even richer. The fact that, you know, not knowing, just there's sometimes you get that Loki type character that's spread across two or three or four or five films. I like the fact that one film he's in, he's out.
That works. Did want to ask you guys this. Now, this is Marvel's 18th consecutive number one opening, and the biggest opening for a film in February, which is not known for being a big movie month. If this movie had been released, say, over Memorial Day, would it have been a bigger opening?
Why do you think they didn't open it over Memorial? Did you think, did Marvel think, oh, it's going to make money, but it's not going to be that big a film?
I do not know. I'm just throwing the question out.
Well, it's a great question.
Yeah, the early projections, they were talking about, $120 million? Well, the early projections
were like, yeah, we're going to make 80 if we're lucky.
Right. and then they bumped it up to 120, and that was literally within a month of the opening. They were talking about 120, and then every week it bumped up higher and higher and higher.
Those pre-sales.
Yeah.
Pre-sale tickets.
I have a feeling that they expected, you know, good things from it, but they had no clue that it was going to be this. Frankly, I don't know if anyone at Disney Marvel had walked up to them 2 months ago and said, hey, you know what? This is going to open bigger than the Avengers. Probably would have been fired and then put in an asylum. Because why would you think that?
I just think it seized the moment. Black Panther, Huey B. Newton, great book. I just sprained my arm for patting myself on the back. I think if you look at it, the Afro-futuristic type film, the fact that it's opening, I mean, come on, let's put two and two together. It's opening during Black History Month.
Right.
The culture of the film, everything that's been about it, I think this was the month to open it. It's, you know, I guess historically it's a soft month to open, you know, to release a film. And you got to also look at the competition. What was it going against? So you weigh everything in there. People were pumped up. The trailers were basically kick-ass. And, you know, the cast is also top-notch. And I will say this, that Marvel put everything into this film that you could expect to see in a Thor, Iron Man, or Captain America. That's what made it that much better. And, you know, you look at Panther and he's like, oh, he's a second-tier type character. He's a, you know, Ant-Man and Wasp type phase character. And this guy, he's knocking heads with, Iron Man, Thor, and Captain America. So I think it was a great moment. They seized it. They looked at the schedule and they said, hey, there's no competition out there. Everyone's going to love this.
Yeah, I think the other thing that made it really good, too, was that a lot of times during the film, it didn't feel like a quote-unquote action hero film. It just seemed like a really good film.
Right.
You know, it wasn't like you didn't need the action hero. It was just the storyline was good enough on its own.
Yeah. I mean, it's a solid drama. You're right. I'm just looking at the box office. It made $5 million less in opening weekend than the Avengers did on 300 fewer screens.
Wow.
That is pretty freaking incredible.
That is.
So I think we all pretty happy that a a film that's centered around black characters is able to do this well, especially since it has a black director. I mean, it's, I think finally, after Patty Jenkins kicked ass last year with Wonder Woman, and now Ryan Coogler this year with Black Panther, I think they can stop this crap about, well, it's only a boys club, and, you know, the leads have to be white males, and the directors have to be white males. I think they've finally shredded that, and it's about time.
As long as they keep it up, yes, I'll agree.
That's true.
Although I do have to say, I saw one really insipid comment. Some conservative blogger said, "You know, why did it have to be Black Panther? Why didn't people rally around Catwoman when that came out?"
Oh God!
Oh, well, what was that quote you saw about Catwoman this week?
the one of the co-writers said it was a piece of excrement, and he was one of the co-writers.
That's a hint.
Yeah, there's a reason that people didn't rally around Catwoman, because it's not a good movie at all. It's a piece of crap. No one's going to rally around that.
I think the only thing it had in common with the character was the name. Sorry, and gender. Other than that.
Yeah, it's
a horrible movie.
It is. I mean, there are worse movies out there, but they're pretty damn bad. I mean, people rally around great movies. Black Panther's a great movie.
So let's see, what other, are we done Black Panthering and move on, or just seemed to keep going. Look at all the Black Panthering we're doing. I mentioned it tied with The Last Jedi as biggest opening weekend. Last Jedi is coming to home and streaming services on March 13th, which is 2 weeks from now.
All right.
The turnaround on that has gotten to be ridiculous though, hadn't it?
Yeah.
Anyway.
Kind of takes away from it, doesn't it?
It does,
a little bit. You know, why go to the theater if, you know, 2 months from now I can take it home on a disc?
Right. Unless it's the kind of film, though, that
you
would enjoy bigger and a bigger screen.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, you guys are right. It's like, why would I take my family to a movie and spend $60-$75 or whatever when, you know...
Just on popcorn.
Right. Yes. Exactly. Yeah. And then like a month later, 2 months later, it's going to be like, oh, we can watch it from home. If we have a good enough home, stereo system, it's going to be just as good. So,
yeah, exactly. I mean, you sit at home with your 55 or 60 inch screen and you're sitting 10 feet away. The image is just as big as if you're at the movie theater. And hopefully your feet aren't sticking to the floor.
That's what I always tell her. I mean, I'm sorry. What were we talking about?
Okay, moving on. This Tuesday, Sebastian Stan and Karen Gillian are going to be on Good Morning America. And so a lot of people are expecting the second Avengers trailer to drop then.
Ah. Okay.
Which I've heard this week, every character in Black Panther that lived is going to be in the next Avengers movie.
Wow.
So it's not as if that cast was big enough already. Now it's... Wow. If you thought now that there's a good thing to having the end credit thing in an Avengers movie, because by the time you sit through those credits, it'll have been like in another movie.
That's true.
And you're ready for it's another painful. Thing to come on. Wow. I have some non-Marvel or Star Wars Disney news.
Really? How is that possible?
I don't know. They have other things? I didn't. Anyway, they're rebooting the Muppets again. For the Disney-specific streaming service that's coming later this year, early next year, eventually someday. Are you guys hoping that they go back to the 1970s version?
This is a series? The Muppets series?
It's supposed to be a Muppets series.
Okay.
As long as they get rid of that little... I didn't like the shrimp. When they...
Wait, wasn't it just on TV like a couple of years ago?
I don't know. Rob said I didn't like the shrimp, and then Ted immediately says Lee. I don't know how to feel about that. But so.
Wow. skipping Muppets then. So the other Disney story, Todd sent this to me, actually. Disney's lawsuit with Redbox. I'm going to let Todd take this one because he probably knows more about it than I do.
Oh, yeah. Basically, Redbox, several months ago, started selling the digital codes. When you buy the Blu-ray DVD multi-pack and it's got the digital code, well, Redbox started selling those codes. Disney filed suit saying that no, those codes can't be resold. Those are for the original purchaser only, and took them to court. And the initial finding was that no, actually, that's property of whoever buys it, and you can do whatever the hell you want with it. Disney may have pushed themselves into a bad spot because this may have further implications for as far as film rights, things of that nature. So they may be sorry that they sued over this. Thought the whole thing was ridiculous. Is like, why would you care that Redbox is reselling the code? They bought it.
I resold some at my yard sale. Come get me, Disney. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. I've never bought one.
It's become quite a large business online to buy digital codes, because most people, you know, if you bought the Blu-ray, why would you want the digital version too? You would just buy the digital version to begin with. So I thought that was interesting that.
But when you just, so here's my question: like, when these movies come out, let's say when The Last Jedi comes out, and I buy the Blu-ray pack, doesn't it usually also come with a digital code?
Yeah, usually.
And that's so, what, like, if you want to put it on your phone or your tablet, and
sure, so you can do that way. But a lot of people don't want it. So, and in Redbox's case, what are they going to do with it? So what they've been doing is selling the codes. Apparently, Redbox tried to work a deal with Disney to purchase rights directly, and Disney decided no. So they just went and
did it anyway.
They're buying them wholesale, and they're turning around and selling these. And yeah, he argued that Disney is misusing its copyrights. So Disney could actually wind up being in a bit of trouble with this situation, as opposed to, haha, we'll stop you from selling something that you legally purchased. Don't understand why they had a problem with that to begin with, but, you know.
Because people wouldn't be buying the digital copies from Disney. Disney right. doesn't make the money, man.
That's By the way, according to CNN, Disney has just bought Redbox. So.
No doubt.
Wouldn't be surprised in the slightest. Not the only lawsuit we had this week, though. This one just came out just before the Oscars, for convenience purposes. A guy named David Zindel is claiming that his Pulitzer Prize-winning father, Paul Zindel, wrote this play called Let Me Hear You Whisper. Now, let's see if this sounds familiar. According to the suit, the 1969 play, quote, tells the story of a lonely janitorial cleaning woman who works the graveyard shift at a scientific laboratory that performs animal experiments for military use. She becomes fascinated by a fantastic, intelligent aquatic creature held captive in a glass tank. Does that sound like anything else?
That Black Panther? No, I'm
just kidding. Sounds exactly like Black Panther, indeed.
It's Dunkirk, damn it. No. yeah, The Shape of Water is... it was hit with the lawsuit and everything. Who's a Guillermo del Toro directed Shape of Water and said, I have never heard of this play. I've talked to my peeps and they've never heard of this play. Well, not sure what's going to come out of this, but hey.
Apparently they turned it into a TV movie, which came out in 1969, and it was written by Mr. Zindel. A scrub woman attempts to rescue a dolphin who will talk to no one but her from a research laboratory. That's a little bit different from... it doesn't say that she decided to have an affair with a dolphin, so I think
it's... Bang it in a bathtub. That was...
Yeah, I think it's something of a different story there. I mean, this is much more of...
Creature from the Black Lagoon.
Yeah.
Unless there's a cat in the lagoon, then it's Creature of the Black Panther Lagoon.
This anyway. This really doesn't sound... I mean, in some ways,
there's
okay.
There's similarities, but...
There's similarities, you know. But that's hardly the same story.
Yeah. Be interesting to see how this works out. But and it's also interesting that it came out just before the Oscars. So, you know, is this going... They've already done the voting, though, haven't they?
They have, yeah. And from what I've seen, Shape of Water is not... Like, it's like 5 to 10 or 5 to 9, however many movies. Like, it doesn't seem like it's going to win Best Picture anyway. But yeah, the voting's already been done, so I don't think that really affected anything as far as the voting.
Good. So there. Let's see what other stuff we have this week. Andy Serkis is directing a movie. It's an adaptation of Rudyard Kipling's The Jungle Book, because we haven't had enough of those movies. They said that this version has been rated PG-13 for intense sequences of action and violence, including bloody images and some thematic events. Oh, you mean it's The Jungle Book.
How about that?
So far, it's the title of this one is not The Jungle Book, though. They're calling it Mowgli.
Oh, okay.
Because that'll make it go over better.
Makes sense, but you have to know who Mowgli is.
I'm wondering how many marquees are going to have it misspelled.
All of
Mo
them.
Gill? What? Ran over the head of the CSIs in Las Vegas with a lawnmower. Okay. Director news. Joss Whedon is off Batgirl. Hang on. Let me rephrase that, because this is not a Me Too story.
Oh.
Been saving that all week. Thank you. Thank you for the rest of the show.
Sounds like an extension of the Killing Joke film that they did. Anyway.
You're not that far off. Anyway, he says he didn't really have the story that he thought he did, and he's failed, so he's not doing Batgirl anymore. That still came out wrong. He is not doing the movie entitled Batgirl with that character anymore. There's not a good way of phrasing this at all, is there?
No, so, there's not. No, and yeah.
So we'll just move on to Christopher Nolan, who says he's not doing James Bond 25. Danny Boyle is, which they said originally Boyle, who's a friend of Daniel Craig, and he's got Barbara Broccoli and Michael G. Wilson on board. And so he's getting John Hodge, who wrote Trainspotting 2, to write James Bond 25. You guys have any comments on a Danny Boyle Bond movie?
I think Boyle and I like both those directors, and I think either one of them directing it makes a good Bond film. I think Danny Boyle is, I've seen probably 90% of his films, I guess. I think he's versatile to do enough to make it a great Bond film. So, yeah, I'm okay with it either way. Boyle does, he's got some, I can definitely see where there would be maybe a little bit more. Not depth. I mean, it's a Bond film. It doesn't need that much depth. But I can see maybe carry a little bit more weight. But Nolan or Boyle, I mean, that's like a win-win either way as far as I'm concerned for a Bond film.
Yeah, I agree. I'm sad to hear that Nolan's not doing it, because Nolan makes these big, usually these big, amazingly cinematic movies, which is good, because if you're, you know, making a movie, it's nice that it's cinematic. But Boyle, to me, strikes me that it might be a little more personal and grounded, which would be awesome. So actually, I'm actually kind of happy about that news. I mean, Nolan would be great, but I think Boyle actually could even deliver something even better. I think that's pretty cool.
I like the idea. And now for lack of a complete lack of a segue, actually, because here's an idea. I'm glad they didn't get anyone who is going to annihilate the movie. Annihilate? Wait a minute, Todd, didn't you see a movie this week called Annihilation?
Oh. Ooh, lovely. That was
smooth.
That was very smooth indeed.
That was horrible. I'm going to hide under my desk.
Yes, I saw a film called Annihilation this week. Let me just mention a box office first. We've been talking about box office a lot for Black Panther. I happened to catch Black Panther on a Friday morning. Show. I got a three hour lunch from work so I could go see it. Thank you, Janice, again.
We'll make sure to tag her in the notes. Yes.
So this was a 11:30 a.m. screening, and the theater was, I'd say, 70% full on a Friday morning. And this was a school day, by the way. I caught Annihilation on the opening night, the Thursday night. And there were seven people at the 7:15 screening for Annihilation. That's probably why Black Panther.
See Black Panther.
Yeah, that's probably why Black Panther is going to make a little bit more money than Annihilation, which is kind of sad, because not that Black Panther's making more, but it's sad that no one is going to see Annihilation because it's a really, really good movie. I think what's hurting the box office is, well, the same reason that the Paramount has kind of dumped it. They've given international rights to Netflix and as opposed to distributing themselves. And I'm not positive, but I believe I heard that Netflix will have it on in 6 weeks. Talking about a fast turnaround.
Wow.
Yeah, talk about fast turnaround time. Now, that might be just internationally, which would make more sense. But Paramount didn't have a lot of confidence that this would be a big box office smash because it's a little bit more of the of a cerebral type piece as opposed to just an action picture. And a lot of times, the deeper science fiction films, like almost always, don't perform that well at the box office. And there's a lot going on in this movie. Basically, it's a weird area, which nobody knows why or how, but this odd area has basically been taken over by something. I mean, alien presence, they don't really know. But there's this weird shimmering barrier, and that's what they call it, the shimmer. And they've had expeditions who've gone in, and basically, like, one person has come out from these previous expeditions, and he's really screwed up. He has major issues, health issues and mental issues. So they send in another expedition to go in, and you're kind of like, why the hell would you go in? But, you know, they go in. And odd things start happening to them, both physically, which makes for the action parts, which are there's some interesting creatures in the movie, and psychologically, and that's really what the movie is about. So you have to pay attention. It's one of those movies that you can't just go in and, you know, wait for the big bursts of color and the explosions and go, ooh, wow, and, you know, wait for Sylvester Stallone to come around with more explosives or something. So what's going on is more in the head of the characters. And sometimes that can be a little bit difficult for some audiences to follow. Some audiences, meaning, you know, the people who wish Martin Short was still a major star, for instance. It is. It's a really, really good movie. It's not the kind of movie that ever would have made a lot of box office. And that way, it's funny because it reminds me of Arrival, because Arrival is also much more in, like, an internal movie, but that actually did really well at the box office.
Great Charlie Sheen film.
Indeed. Exactly. The great Charlie Sheen film. Anyway, Annihilation is a really good movie. If you like thoughtful science fiction pieces where they don't give you all the answers and you have to kind of figure out what's going on, and like 2001, you have to figure out what happened, this is your kind of movie. And if you don't like those kind of movies, you will be really pissed off that you spent your money to go see this. So
don't worry, it'll be on Netflix soon.
Yeah, exactly. It will be on Netflix soon. It has a lot of good action sequences. The actors are all really good. It's unusual in that the leads are all females. I don't know. Maybe that's really why Paramount was worried. Who knows? Although why they would have been after what we've been talking about today, right? Doesn't make any sense. I really think it's much more just because it's a slow, more thought-driven piece rather than action. So I think that was their issue, not having a lot of confidence in it. But it's definitely a really good movie. And eventually, probably not too long, you'll get to see it on Netflix anyway.
Yeah, so let's see. That's an American-made film, though. And I know Lee likes his foreign films. So I watched a movie for you this week, Lee. It's called The Foreigner, which is not at all a foreign film.
Jackie Chan?
Yeah, it's billed as Jackie Chan versus Pierce Brosnan's James Bond.
Yeah, I've heard that Chan's not... Somebody's not in it as much as they... I haven't seen it, but somebody's not in it, right? As much as they seem like they would be if you watched the trailer?
Both of them seem like they should be in it constantly, and yet they're not.
That's weird.
I mean, it's kind of Jackie Chan versus James Bond, but there's a lot more to it. Short forming the story, Jackie's daughter is killed in an IRA bombing in London, and Pierce is a government official that works in Ireland who used to be part of the IRA.
Which is exactly why I didn't see the film. I just want to point that out. It's exactly why I didn't see the film, because I could tell by the trailer that they're saying something anti-IRA about it. So I was like, I'm staying away from this, because I know Brosnan himself is Irish. I'm sorry, I'm cutting you off. But that kind of irritated me when I watched the trailer, so I purposefully stayed away from the movie.
Ah, but it's the new IRA.
Yeah, the new
with
IRA.
fewer calories and a new great taste or some. I don't. Anyway, continuing the plot, Jackie wants to know who it was that did the bombing. So he basically harasses the crap out of Pierce Brosnan until the whole conspiracy is uncovered and Pierce may or may not be a part of it. And it may be his son. No, it's his wife. No, it's his daughter. He doesn't have a daughter. Well, then it's not her. It's somebody else. Whatever. I was expecting this movie to be, honestly, a bit more fun than it was. So I saw it was directed by Jackie Chan. But it's a lot darker than your ordinary Jackie Chan movie. And I don't know if it's because he's going to be 64 in a couple of months. But it was a good movie for what it was, but I was a bit disappointed. Because my favorite Jackie Chan movies, right, they have humor in them, but I don't like the comedies. Like Shanghai Noon and Shanghai Night or Rush Hour, I didn't like those. Although Chris Tucker says a Rush Hour 4 is happening, so for those of you who like those, good news for you. I like things like the Super Cop series, which is a series. There's like four of them. Or Who Am I, which I'm going to review at some point, because that was a really cool Jackie Chan movie. But they have a serious plot to them, but there's also humor involved. You know, they're not as dark. This one got kind of not Batman or Blade Runner dark, but dark enough. So basically, if you like dark spy thrillers with some martial arts thrown in, then this is the movie for you. If not, I'd still skip the Emoji Movie and move on to Annihilation, which will be out in about 6 weeks.
Yeah, The Foreigner, I'll jump on. Also, when I watched the trailer, besides the whole anti-IRA thing, the vibe I was getting, and I'm very proud of my Irish ancestry, I'll just say that. But I also thought, it feels like maybe the at the end of the film, it should just immediately segue into Liam Neeson Taken film, because that's exactly what it looked like to me. But I don't know if it was anything like that or not.
There were bits and pieces, except the daughter is not able to be retrieved because she was, you know, kind of blown up at the beginning of the movie, but there was a lot of it to that. Jackie goes to visit Pierce in his office and says, I want to know the names. Here, have some money. Give me the names. I don't know the names. You'll have to come back later. Oh, fine. And so he goes downstairs, builds a bomb, and sets it off in the guy's bathroom. Not enough to, you know, blow up the building, but enough to make it, you know, ooh, earthquake. No, the little Chinese guy just blew up your bathroom downstairs. I guess I better give him names. You know, there was a scene like that, and I'm kind of like, but it wasn't, that sounds funny, and we're giggling at it now, but you watch it in the movie, and you're like, that wasn't meant to be funny. So,
that's
take
odd.
That for what you wish. It's one of those kind of movies.
I'm curious.
Where can I see it again? It's on Netflix now?
I think it is.
Oh, okay.
Where do you stand on Rumble in the Bronx? Just curious. Asking for a friend.
That is one of the borderline movies, because it had a lot of extraordinarily silly humor to it, but it also had an overlying serious plot. So there are parts of that movie that I think are awesome, and I think all of his, you know, the stunts that he does himself, which are, let's see, all of them, are impressive as hell, and certainly nothing I could ever feasibly conceive of myself doing. But then when it gets to the really, let's throw in some silly humor that's from a National Lampoon movie, and you kind of go, we could have done without that scene in my head. But, you know, I have Rumble in the Bronx. It's in the living room with all the other DVDs. And I like it. Yeah, you know, it's like I said, Who Am I is my favorite one of his. And we'll get to that movie eventually.
Yay!
But let's see. You know what? Let's stay in London and move on to another story. Doctor Who. Some Doctor Who news came out this week. They released maybe a 10-second video of the new logo for Jodie Whittaker's Doctor Who season, which starts in August, which is not soon enough. But the special effects team has, apparently they got rid of everybody who has been working on Doctor Who before. Chris Chinball is now in charge of the show. The FX team is the guys from Altered Carbon, which was it last week you talked about that?
Two weeks ago.
They want to give it a more cinematic look. Murray Gold is not doing the music anymore, but they didn't say who they replaced him with. The theme song will be about the same. Go figure.
That'd be sad if it wasn't.
It's only been on the air for 5,000 years. Don't change the theme song now. I think this looks good. Did either of or any of you guys? There's more than two of you. I think Ted's still here. Did you guys see the new cinematic look?
No, but I have a question about it. So one of my daughters really likes Doctor Who. I have not really watched. I think I've seen like two episodes, and I apologize for that.
You need to see Blink, if nothing else.
Blink?
Season 3, episode 10.
Okay. So if I was going to start watching, and I know it's been on for, you know, BBC in thousands of years, but if I were going to start watching Doctor Who, and this may be an impossible question to answer, but if I were going to start watching it, what should I start with?
If you want to start with when they reboot, well, it's not a reboot, though. It's a continuation. They just took 15 years off.
Doesn't the character get rebooted?
Yeah.
Okay.
The doctor regenerates. And
yeah, well, the reason they did that originally, the original Doctor Who, William Hartnell, was, I think he was 84 when they started the show, and they didn't expect it to run that long. So 3 years later, he's 87. I'd like to retire now, please. Thank you. So they came up with the idea that since he's a Time Lord, he can regenerate and get a whole new body and attitude and costume, and they changed him to Patrick Troughton. And then when Patrick got done, they said, no, we're going to change him to John Pertwee, so on and so forth. And that just became a thing in the show, that when the actor wants to leave, we can keep the series going by regenerating, put the doctor in a stressful situation where he has to regenerate, and you get a whole new doctor. Which I think is a brilliant idea, rather than the soap opera, the part of Bob is now being played by Steve. They actually, you know, they make a fairly big deal about it, which I think is kind of cool. But where to start? If you want to start with when they started again in 2005, actually start where they started in 2005. But if you want to go back to the old ones,
you have to go back to 1875.
You're not kidding. I would actually probably start with the Tom Baker series. He's actually the longest running doctor.
He's the one with the scarf and the
one with the scarf and the teeth,
big curly hair.
Tom Baker. Okay.
But the 2005 is a good place to start, I think.
You said season 3, episode 3?
Episode 10, right?
When they started up again, the numbers reset. So the episode I mentioned, which was Blink, is season 3 of the new series.
Right.
Oh, okay.
So that's what, 2008 or something like that.
10th episode.
It's a David Tennant episode, and it's one of those weird ones. When they restarted the show, they're 13 episode seasons, and usually episode 9 or 10, the Doctor himself is rarely in it. And this is one of those episodes where the Doctor is in it for maybe 3 minutes. But I will tell you this for the episode Blink, do not watch it by yourself at 3 a.m. with the lights off.
Or with children. It is very scary.
And actually, next time you're on the show, you will have watched it again, and I'll tell my Blink story with this because it's damn funny. Okay. And right now, it wouldn't make sense because you haven't seen the show. So that's homework for everybody.
David Tennant, my favorite Doctor Who, Doctor of the Doctor Whos.
Gotcha.
I actually liked Sylvester McCoy, even though no one remembers that he even did it.
Isn't he the one with the goofy little hat, the white hat?
That's him.
Okay.
I liked it. Yes, he was the last one of the first series, and people blame him for it dying. It's not his fault. Anyway.
It's totally his fault. It was the hat that threw people off.
Speaking of other shows that get lost in space... How's that for a segue? Did anyone else see Netflix reboot of Lost in Space trailer?
No. I did, yes.
I heard a resounding no.
That was me.
what did you think of it? Because I thought it could be interesting.
Oh, it could be great, but there's so little to go on from the trailer. I mean, it's just a teaser, and that's the whole
point. Yeah, it's basically, look, they're getting on a ship.
Right.
Ooh.
But I like the fact that the tone appears to be serious and somewhat suspenseful, as opposed to, you know, the Dr.
Look, it's Dr. Smith being goofy.
Exactly. And if they have a Dr. Smith, God, I hope they have Dr. Smith. And if hopefully he's kind of goofy, because I didn't really care that much for the Dr. Smith version that was in the Lost in Space movie, even though, I mean, Gary Oldman's pretty hard to beat, but
say, wasn't that Gary Oldman?
Yeah, yes. That's not the way to play the character. I mean, that's what the character was supposed to be originally in the TV show. And
yeah, in the pilot of the original TV show, he was creepy as hell.
Yeah, exactly. And he just started going for laughs instead, because he thought, this is ridiculous, I'm going to do what I want. And it worked. And basically it saved the show from being canceled after the first season. So I do hope they have, maybe not as broad as Dr. Smith was in that, but that would be good to have some comic relief, because that's not a bad thing to have in any TV show or series, which we talked about. Again, let's get back to Black Panther. That's one thing I mentioned last week again, but I was surprised by how much comic relief there was in Black Panther, which helped it, because otherwise it's like too heavy and too serious. But so I can see them doing that, but I would hope that this is a heavier, more serious show than the TV series was.
Be like a good Jackie Chan movie and just have comedy tossed in periodically and not.
Right. But not be as god awful heavy as the movie was, because that movie was just, I mean, the Jupiter 2 never would have taken off if it was that damn heavy. It just did not work.
Oh, come on. Joey from Friends was really good in that movie.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Why do I remember him being in that?
The only good thing about that movie was the fact that Billy William Mummy was in it, and that was fun. But other than that, it was like, God. No, Oldman was cool, but that character just doesn't fit that story.
Bill Mummy was really good in Babylon 5. I don't know if you ever watched that or not.
That has to go on my list so I can come back on the show.
Yeah, yeah. Extra homework for you, young man. Speaking of things that are also really, really old, Sonic the Hedgehog is getting a movie next year. And they just signed a big deal with, I think it's Paramount, to make this. Sonic the Hedgehog came out in 1991. So isn't this movie like 28 years late?
This is a live action film, though. It's actually just a documentary of a hedgehog. It curls up. You have to like scratch its belly and he opens up, and that's the plot.
Did anyone else pick up on the fact that Rob just finishes speaking with me and then says, speaking of things really old? Yeah. Nice.
Well,
excellent segue, but yeah, you know.
Comment about Lee being I was talking about Lost in Space.
Lost in Space.
Okay, how's this then? Speaking of things I thought was dead. They announced this week a new song for the Wrinkle in Time movie done by Sade, who I thought was dead.
Wow.
Well, no, I mean, she's... I actually read this. Let me find it again. Here we go. She has released a whopping 2 albums in the past 25 years.
And she looks exactly the same she looked.
She's been
25 years
Clark
ago.
Effect.
She's been busy.
She's only 59 years old.
She's been moisturizing between albums, Ooh. Doing nothing but moisturizing.
Ugh.
Wow. Anywho, moving on, I guess. Let's see, the forthcoming and often delayed Nightwing movie. They have a director, Chris McKay, who said he's looking forward to doing it. But you know what? You've put it off so long. I'm going to go off and do a Dungeons and Dragons movie. So make of that what you will, I suppose. It can't be any worse than the film version they did in 2000 with Marlon Wayans and Justin Whalen. Am I the only one who watched that?
Yes.
And went, oh my God, that was horrible.
He's pretty sure you are.
Rob, was that Blank Fan?
Was that what?
Was that Blank Fan?
No, it was a Dungeons and Dragons movie.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Same actor. Blank Man, I think, was better.
Ooh.
Which, brace yourself.
That hurts.
Not good. All right, let's see. We've got some casting news this week. And one that has confused a lot of people is actress April Bowlby, who I have no idea who she is, because she was from apparently Drop Dead Diva. There's because yeah, I watched that. She's been cast as Rita Farr in the upcoming Titans TV series, and Rita Farr is Elastigirl, which has confused a lot of people, thinking, but that's from The Incredibles. They're ripping it off. Flip that.
Yeah.
Doom Patrol came out in like the 60s, which was a bit before The Incredibles.
Just a bit.
So there. Sticking with DC stuff, and now we're segueing into something else at the same time. Jay Hernandez, who played Diablo in the absolutely spectacular flop called Suicide Squad, he is your new Magnum PI.
Whoa!
Which, no mustache.
Ted's excited.
No mustache? What's the point? Mustache.
How can it be no mustache? It's got to be a mustache. Well,
there's a lot of changes for this. Magnum is now a decorated ex-Navy SEAL who comes home from Afghanistan and becomes a private investigator.
Come on. PC
and Rick. There is no Higgins. There is no mustache. I suspect there is no longer a Ferrari.
Wow. That's not Magnum PI. That's just using some of the same characters. And not even really using them.
So, next you're going to say he won't even wear a Tigers baseball hat. He's like, okay, I'm out. That's awful.
Would it be okay if he wore a Red Wings hat?
No. But, yeah, it's like Love Boat with no boat. You know, there's no island. There's the island. The
Love Boat without the boat.
Everyone into the water.
So, is Tom Selleck any way affiliated with the show?
Not that I know of. Which raises the question, what's the point? Let's see. Melanie Diaz has scored a role as an undisclosed sister in the reboot of Charmed. I love how they phrased that.
An undisclosed sister.
An undisclosed sister. We don't know which of the sisters she's going to be, but she's going to be one of them. Okay.
She might be a new sister. Maybe there's a fourth sister.
Well, I thought this was going to be like a Happy Days thing where there's a brother that appears at the end.
Could be it.
That's entirely probable. They rewrote the timeline. See, that's what it was, which goes right into what they're doing with Terminator 3 or 6. It depends on your point of view, I suppose, which is filming soon, starring Arnold and Linda Hamilton. What they're doing the same thing that Halloween just did, where they're ignoring everything after Terminator 2.
Which is wise.
T3 and beyond is gone now.
Terminator Genesis, gone.
Oh, that's sad. Terminator Salvation, no more.
No more.
What about that horrible ass one?
That horrible ass one. Yes, it doesn't exist anymore.
That's what I heard too. Actually, so I was thinking.
Okay.
That could be the next
horrible
one.
Horrible ass one. That's gone. Let's see. Let's see where this goes. T2 is. I'm going to compare it to Blade Runner in that they're both sci-fi movies, except it's not. I stayed awake through T2. Blade Runner is also being compared to a movie that just came out called Mute, which is on Netflix, and apparently the critics hate it.
Really?
Got a 35 on Metacritic.
Any of you guys seen it yet?
I haven't, but I saw the reviews like you did, and yeah, they just hate it.
I was going to watch it before the show, and then I was busy on another gig, unfortunately. Yeah, I noticed it's kind of weird because this is a guy who directed Duncan Jones, the director. He directed Moon, which is really, really good. He also directed Warcraft.
Which is not.
Yeah. It's kind of a weird mix there.
I loved how they this one review phrased it as compared to Warcraft. Let's see. When you compare Mute to Warcraft, Warcraft is relatively stellar.
Oh my god.
Ow.
Yeah, seriously.
Ow, that's not good. Let's move on to something that is good. Lee, you saw, I think you're the only one still who has seen either any of the Paddington movies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because last week, I was in both of them, yes.
Last week you mentioned that Willie, the director from Paddington, whose name...
Paul King.
Thank you. It's on the notes with the candy bar I had at the beginning of the show. He's redoing Willy Wonka, and apparently he's also rebooting Pinocchio.
Yeah, the Willy Wonka thing isn't... It's Willy Wonka, he's younger.
So it's not like he's still got, it's like how Willy Wonka came to be Willy Wonka, which I don't know if you guys want to see that. It doesn't really draw me to it, but that's instead of like a reboot, film. It's more like, yeah, it's more like this is how he grew up kind of thing.
So, the origin story.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Willy Wonka origins. Yeah.
I see a lot of beatings in his future.
That's right.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, no, but anyway, it's Willy Wonka with being, the Pinocchio story. I don't know how you guys feel about that. It never really drew me as a child. Like, I don't care about the story of Pinocchio, stupid Italians. But I don't know what you guys think about it.
I'm not particularly enthusiastic about Pinocchio either. Didn't really care for the Disney version. Didn't really care for two or three other versions I've seen on TV at various times. It just doesn't really draw me. Didn't really care for its insertion into AI at the end of the film either. So,
did nothing. Ted, comments, questions,
nothing.
Concerns.
Next.
Okay, he is still here. Wow.
Next.
All right. So this one. I'm not real sure what to make of this. Fox Searchlight and Devon Franklin are set to produce a film called Flamin' Hot.
Wait, I thought Fox got sold.
Well, kind of. I'm just passing the story along.
Wait, you mean the Cheetos biopic isn't about Trump?
This is the Cheetos biopic of a guy named Richard Montañez, who rose from humble beginnings to create a food phenomenon. And I wanted to ask you this because I didn't understand it. I'm going to quote from a Dark Horizons news story here. He came up with the idea to create Flamin' Hot Cheetos, transforming the Frito-Lay brand into a pop culture phenomenon and disrupting the entire food industry in the process. I've never cared for Flamin' Hot Cheetos, nor have I noticed that Frito-Lay is now a phenomenon in the food industry business.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's false.
Did I miss something?
Pretty sure that's a little bit of hype. What's funny, though, is
Frito-Lay does, and I'm not saying Frito-Lay is great, but they own so much crap that you probably don't even know is owned by Frito-Lay.
It's hard not to know, buy something by Frito-Lay whenever you go to the store.
But is that due to Flamin' Hot Cheetos? That's yes. That's what makes
the greatness of Flamin' Hot Cheetos, which is I was about to make an off-color remark. I won't do that. But.
Oh, you totally should. This actually could be kind of an interesting
your
film.
Black Panther comment at the beginning of the show was okay, but you're not
good enough.
Yeah, but that was a joke. This would have offended several listeners.
Ah,
not really.
Several.
Only well, several. All
San
several.
Francisco. The San Francisco characters. The Flamin' Hot. Several. San Francisco.
No, go ahead.
No, that's it. That was it. That's all I got.
Apparently, this was a janitor at Frito-Lay who invented it. Now that makes it interesting.
See that? I'll give you that. It just threw me off. That look how big a pop culture phenomenon it is. I'm like,
yeah, that's completely stupid.
I don't even see it at the store anymore.
Oh yeah, you still see them at the stores. You just got to go to the right stores. Okay. But yeah, that's a little bit of a ridiculous bit of hype. But the fact that this was not someone who is, you know, one of their flavor researchers or whatever the hell they call these guys. I'm sorry, research chefs and food scientists. That's kind of cool. But yeah, it's not really exactly a cultural phenomenon. That's a bit stupid to say that.
Did you know there were icing filled Chips Ahoy cookies?
Yes.
Doesn't that sound like an awful idea as well? They should make a movie about that as well.
Well, what's really cool is that Tide Pods are now coming out in red velvet. So that's what I'm looking forward to.
I mean, I snack on them all the time.
Yeah, totally.
It really cleans me out, if you know
what I mean. That was excellent. It's interesting that at least two members of Congress have introduced legislation to restrict the sales of Tide Pods or possibly even ban them when there are other things going on in the country that they choose not to do anything about. Anyway.
Are you referring to guns? Oh, sorry. Did I bring that up blatantly?
I would never say that.
Yeah.
On this show.
Okay. I've got one story left, but that's what we're quitting with. Do you guys have anything else you want to add to the show?
I've had fun.
Okay.
I'll say this. I've got two more Best Picture nominees. I'm going to see them both on this coming Friday, I believe. And then for the first time in my life ever, I will have seen all the Best Picture nominees.
Really? So,
and of course, the Oscars are next Sunday, right? So
that's pretty good.
Have you prepared? Yeah.
Coming in.
And they've all been good.
We'll do an Oscar show next Sunday. And make sure Lee reviews every single one.
I'll sound like a college basketball coach. I'll have no voice by the end of the show. It'll be great.
And I saw this other one. That's stuff. Anyway.
Suffer.
All right. Wanted to leave with this one because this is the least intelligent story in entertainment I saw this week. Has it, because, okay, cryptocurrency is a big thing now with, you know, Bitcoin and whatever. There's a new one, and I'm going to try to pronounce this, and it's going to come out wrong, but there's a reason. They're calling it Bitcoin 2 Gen. Basically, it's Bitcoin with two I's next to each other for no reason. And they've got a spokesman, because everything needs a spokesman, and the spokesman for Bitcoin 2... is Steven Seagal.
Oh my God. Well, that inspires confidence.
Wow. You know, ban guns and him at the same time and get rid of Bitcoin to
this. Wim, do you have a web address I want to send him my login from our 401k? I have got to get those funds into his hands immediately. I hope they all have two eyes in them.
Googly. You actually, if you could hold a Bitcoin too, it would have googly eyes, because it's been beaten the crap out of by Steven Seagal. That is, I think that's enough for this week. So, Ted's not dead. Awesome,
Mr. So, Ted weighs in with his pronouncement.
Wow, that's it for this week, folks. That's Ted Hicks, the quiet one over there. That's Lee. He talks a lot, which is good. That's Todd. He's normally on the show anyway. And I'm Rob. Good night, everybody.
Later.
Captain, we're losing power in the warp engines.
I think we should be leaving now.
I'm going to go home and sleep with my wife.
And on that unusually harmonious bombshell, it is time to end.
I am very disappointed.
Man, we have a weird job.
It's shameful, but it's a living.
And like that, he's gone.
Darn, that's the end.
Leroy?